Welcome to the GeoMob Podcast, where we discuss geo-innovation in any and all forms, whether for fun or profit. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the GeoMob Podcast. My guest today is Felix Palmer, who will be presenting the A5 discrete global grid system. So Felix is a kind of experienced open source geo developer, and he's going to take us through exactly what exactly this project is and what are the use cases, why it's interesting, why he built it. And so I'm hoping to learn. I'm not deeply familiar with this system, so it's going to be, you know, bit of educational for me as well. Felix, welcome to the show, or I should say welcome back to GeoMob. You have spoken at a GeoMob, but at one of our online events. It was like
yes, that was, it was actually in COVID time. And I remember when I joined the event, I saw myself on the camera, having not had a haircut for a good few months, and was kind of appalled with how I looked. So happy to join in calmer times, and happy to be on the podcast.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Hopefully we'll get you to one of our actual in-person events at some point. So why don't we start, introduce yourself a bit. Tell us who you are, what you do, what's your background in geospatial?
My path to geospatial is maybe a little bit different. I started studying physics at Oxford, and I was always interested in like visual things, but not necessarily geospatial things. So I was more that kind of physicist who wanted to like build things, make computer games. And from this, over the years, I got to doing like computer graphics, especially on the web. So I started a project called Procedural, which eventually I made a company around, and then eventually open sourced that. And this project was basically the simplest way of explaining it, something like Google Earth, like in a browser, you have a 3D landscape and you can move around it. And through doing this, I eventually stopped this, and I switched to working on a much more well-known project called DeckGL, which was originally created at Uber and is now downloaded, I think, about a million times a month on MPM. And it's essentially a project for big data visualization. So you can visualize anything like points, polygons, lines, but also other types of layers. So you might have like a layer, which is like a screen grid layer where it aggregates data on your screen, or you can also have layers which are aggregating into cells, which is kind of the topic of today. I guess we'll get to it.
Okay. Right. So here today, we want to talk about the A5 grid system. What is that? What led you to work on this? And then we'll maybe get into, maybe start, what is a grid system in general for those listeners who aren't that familiar with it? And then we'll get into A5 and how it compares to some of the others.
Yeah. So essentially, a grid system is trying to find a way that you can segment the world into some kind of cells so you can do analysis on them. Now, if you are just imagining the world to be a flat surface, which locally is, like you look at a city and you don't think, oh, it's part of a curved planet, then you could say, I want to carve up my city into squares. That's what a lot of, say, American cities look like. But in principle, you could do this anywhere. And then you could analyze it block by block. So you could do an analysis of, I don't know, crime or income or temperature or anything. And very, very often you are going to be somehow bucketing data into cells in this way.
Gotcha.
So far, so good. You can choose different ways of constructing the cell sizes. Some of the most natural ones are just going to be like a chessboard, so squares, or like a honeycomb, like hexagons. But the problem comes when you want to extend this grid across the whole Earth, which is spherical or almost spherical. But even if it was just a sphere, then you very quickly hit a problem because you can't extend this chessboard or even this honeycomb in a way that it doesn't distort. It's essentially the same problem as when you have a map projection.
Right.
That you can't make it the same everywhere. You always have to have something where you're compromising either the angles or the sizes. It's just going to stretch. Like you can't take a tennis ball and stretch it out onto a flat surface without something tearing.
Okay, right. Okay, so we got the problem. So now how do you solve this? What's your approach on how to deal with this?
So there's many, I mean, this is something that's got quite a long history behind it, like decades. I'm not going to be able to go through everything. I will try and focus on the systems that are the most used, like commercially, without sort of comment on if they are the best ones. And the kind of simplest conceptual way to do this is if you imagine the Earth is a cube, a simplified cube, and on each side of these, you're going to put a chessboard. Yep. Then you're going to inflate this as if it was a balloon to make it into a sphere. So there you kind of have these six chessboards, which have been warped onto the sphere. And this is at a very, very kind of basic level what the system from Google called S2 does. And they use this to speed up pretty much any geospatial query on their databases. So behind the scenes, this is the system that is powering lots and lots of things. I think, incidentally, it also powered Pokemon Go. So you could kind of cheat by knowing what the grid system was where you could find new monsters.
Wait, and S2 is open source or no?
S2 is open source. Yeah. The specification. So there's a bunch of different libraries that then go to it. And you kind of have like two parts to this. You have the underlying sort of maths geometry idea, and then you have the implementations. So the actual, there's a website by Google that's just s2geometry, I think, .io. And there they describe their system and give some links to libraries that are implementing it. But for example, in DeckGL, we have a layer that's called the S2 layer, and you give that identifiers. So each one of these like chess squares, if you want, has got an ID. And if you give that to DeckGL, then it's just going to draw that square for you in the same way if you gave it a latitude, longitude, it will draw the point.
I see. And presumably I can go deeper and deeper, right? I can take each square and subdivide that into a chessboard and subdivide that.
Exactly. So yeah, great point. Yeah. So this is actually the beauty of using a square as a shape, is that it's very, very easy to cut into four and it overlaps perfectly. And the reason that these systems are called discrete global grid systems is the system is the idea that you have a whole set of like a whole hierarchy of grid systems. So you don't just have the high resolution, the very kind of granular one or the global scale, but you can keep cutting up. And in the S2 system, you can get all the way down to the squares being roughly 1 centimeter squared. So this is really nice that you can basically have an identifier that can be used to describe a region the size of a continent or the size of a coin. And it all fits just into one integer in a database.
So, Felix, problem solved. We're done, right?
Well, I mean, in a way, problem solved. You can take this idea, and for S2 was one of the kind of first available systems that was doing this. But then came along another one, which is very popular and well-known now, called H3, which came from Uber, I think, about 8 or something years ago, definitely quite a long time ago. And on the face of it, it's actually kind of quite similar, just rather than squares, it's using hexagons.
And if I may ask, was the name H3 intentionally chosen to be, you know, is one more than two? Is that the...
No, it's actually more complex than that. So you have, I mean, this whole space is actually really fascinating. You can just go deeper and deeper and deeper. So the S2 comes from a mathematical description of the symmetry of a sphere. So it's a way of describing an object that no matter how much you kind of rotate it, it's always going to look the same, and that's a sphere. And the H3 is the symmetry group of the H3 system, which is a symmetry group of an icosahedron, which is a kind of more complicated solid. So you can kind of think of it as, in a way that a cube is an approximation of a sphere, that an icosahedron is an even better approximation of a sphere. But each of the sides is a triangle, each of the faces is a triangle rather than a square, essentially.
Okay.
These are kind of things which are quite hard to explain with words. Definitely visualization helps. So looking up like the different platonic soles or just looking up the H3 system or S2 system really kind of pays dividends if you haven't seen them before here.
Okay, so we've got H3. I have heard of H3, which, as you say, came out of Uber and it became kind of well-known, also an open source system. So, so why do we need A5? What's the next step here?
So if we go back to this idea of like map projections, then there's no such thing as the perfect map projection. It's just depending on the use case, you're going to use one projection or another one. So one of the most commonly used ones that we have now is the one that was made by Google Maps, and they wanted to approximate the world to be a square. And this worked well if you wanted to serve maps on the internet, on low-powered computers. But the unfortunate side effect is that you completely distort the scale of things across the world. Like Africa looks about the same size as Greenland, and it's just very, very far off. But for the purposes of like local mapping, you don't care. You zoom into Africa and everything works. You don't have your streets that are not parallel, not being parallel, etc. And the same is kind of true of these global grid systems, that the different decisions you make, and this goes all the way down to the underlying geometry that you have, you're going to get different strengths and different weaknesses. So one of the strengths of the S2 system that I've already mentioned is that it nicely hierarchically subdivides. Mm. Now, this is something, but the downside of it is, like when I said, imagine that the Earth is a cube, you laughed. Well, because it isn't, right? So the downside is that if you take a cube and you blow it up into a sphere, then you're really, really going to distort it. Like what used to be squares, no longer are squares. They're more kind of like diamond shapes. So you get like a lot of distortion on the system. And the H3 system gets around this. And it means that the resulting cells actually look much nicer on a map. They stay looking like hexagons, whereas the Google S2 cells, then they look like squares or very squashed like gotcha. Rhombuses. And both of these systems actually, and I'm getting to finally answering your question of why A5, both of these systems have cell sizes which are not equal. And it's not just that they might be unequal near the poles or something like that. Across the whole globe, there's like a gradual but noticeable variation in size. And it's roughly a factor of 2. So, for example...
My understanding rate is H3 tries to solve this by, it's not all hexagons, right? There are a few pentagons that they stick kind of at the bottom of the Indian Ocean or something like that to try to.
So they have 12 pentagons, and it's not that they stick them there just to try and solve something. They have no choice. Like geometrically, you have to have the pentagons there or it doesn't align. And that's actually one of the downsides of the H3 system, which I know, having worked on the visualization code for it, that it's very annoying that you might have several billion hexagons, but only 12 pentagons, and you have to write the code to handle the pentagons because they might come up if you're visualizing. And I don't mean to criticize the H3 system here. Like, if you think of why it was created, then it was a ride-sharing company, Uber, who wanted to analyze and match riders to rides in cities. So this is a very kind of global scale problem. And by orienting the kind of reference system of the whole grid in a way that makes the pentagons, as you said, go in the ocean, then it didn't really matter because in their use cases, then you'd never get the pentagons actually hitting, you know, you're never going to drive a car into the sea. But since then, people have started using H3 for absolutely everything. So the pentagons definitely do come up. And yes, you can say that it's like a minor inconvenience, but it is one that is there inherently because they are building the sphere from hexagons, and that you cannot cover the sphere in hexagons in a way that they fit together. If you try and do that, you end up with a honeycomb, and a honeycomb is flat. And that's why I need the pentagons to kind of stitch together these different kind of hexagonal patches, which are then going to make your sphere.
Okay. All right. So now how are we going to solve that? How does A5 address this? Or what are we?
Okay. So the way A5, so there's, well, the problem of having the 12 pentagons, I mean, you can solve that by having only pentagons. Basically with A5, I kind of came across it semi by accident. Like, I spend a lot of time looking at visualization code. And I think it's worthwhile pointing out that that's how I came to this, that I found a paper from the 1980s, which describes tiling patterns of pentagons. And I thought, that's interesting. I didn't think it was possible to tile pentagons, or not in any kind of useful way. And it turns out that it is possible to tile pentagons, but you have to make them not be regular. You have to make the angles of each of the vertices be different, even if the sides are the same. So that's kind of the trick that you do here. And I think in a way you can say, hey, but that's cheating. But you have to remember that the projection from the cube to the sphere, or the icosahedron to the sphere, is also going to warp the angles. So you generally, in the projection, warp the angles anyway. It's just that with A5, with the pentagons, you're starting with them already not equal. But that doesn't mean that they don't overlap. It still covers the whole surface of the world in equal cells.
Each pentagon is different? The angles of each pentagon are different? Or are they...
No. They are the same.
They're the same, but they're not... It's not regular.
Yeah, they're not the same. And then you have this pattern where they're rotated or flipped, but it is the same shape, repeating again and again. So each of them then has the same kind of geometry, the same topology. And then the other part of what A5 has done differently is it's chosen a projection which exactly preserves area. And this is even taking into account the non-spherical shape of the Earth. So what it then gives you is a way to subdivide the entire planet at a resolution of your choice into a bunch of cells which you know are exactly the same size, like to the limits of your precision of your computer. So it's like, I don't know, like you can just say 8 decimal places or something. And this is really nice, because if you compare it to a system like S2 or H3, then if you're doing any kind of analysis, you should be considering, ideally, what is the area of your cells. Like, if you're doing an aggregation and you're counting, say, restaurants in every cell, then you need to know how big every cell is to make a useful comparison. And the issue with something like H3 is that if you make this comparison in, say, London and Paris, then the neighboring cells in London are going to be this similar size. But if you're comparing cells in London and those in Paris, then they won't be the same. And it's kind of like if you were to measure like distances and say, hey, in London we use miles, in Paris we use kilometers, and, you know, my average commute in London is 10 miles, the average commute in Paris is 10 kilometers, it's the same thing, which sounds ridiculous because you can't compare because they're different units, but you are kind of inadvertently doing this with a system like H3 if the cell sizes are not the same.
Okay. So take us through the history of the A5 project. So you were deep in DeckGL working on H3, and you kind of recognized these shortcomings, and you decided a new system was needed to address this. Is that?
I mean, it was more that I stare at visualizations a lot of the time, and then when I see a pretty tiling pattern, then I guess someone who's a contractor is going to see a garden drive, and they're going to think that this is like pieces of concrete. Someone who makes bathrooms is going to think of porcelain tiles. And I look at that and I think, hey, this could make a cool visualization. So what really drove me in the beginning was just this feeling like, would this actually be possible to do, to cover the whole world in pentagons? Because I've a number of times heard this like description of these grid systems where you say like you can cut the world up into triangles, squares, and hexagons, and nothing more. Pentagons just don't fit together. And it really sounded, when I saw this paper that's about tiling pentagons, like, well, they never extended it to a sphere. They only were doing on a flat surface. And it kind of sounded like, well, fine, challenge accepted. Let's see if we can do this. And then in doing it, then I looked at what S2 and what H3 were being used for, and how could I sort of do something new so as to complement these systems. And not just sort of say, oh, it's a H3, but with pentagons. Like, it should be something that you can solve some problems that the other ones are maybe not so good at. and incidentally the name, then it's just following through with the same idea. So there's a symmetry group of the A5 system, which is just called A5. Okay. So in a way, I didn't really come up with the name myself. It's been around for a century. It's just a way of describing how the symmetry of the whole system behaves.
And so what's the current status of the project beyond, you have a very nice looking website, which I've been checking out, but this is working code or what? Can people play with this?
Definitely.
How far is it?
So the website that you see, so the first version I wrote in TypeScript, because that's what I use for DeckGL, and shared in this kind of more visual form. So another way that I could have gone about it was maybe writing an academic paper, and this is something that I would like to do in the future. But I thought the best way, given my skill set, to share this would be to try and have these examples. And I would really encourage people to go and have a look at this site, which is a5geo.org.
Well, of course, link that in the show notes.
Yeah, because I really like explaining things in like a visual way, and I've made various visualizations which were not just to sort of show off the system, it's to help me understand how on earth it kind of works underneath the covers. So I think it goes quite nicely into the various technical details. I might have forgotten what your question was, if you could repeat it.
Well, I mean, I guess just my question is for what, right now this is an idea or this is kind of working code that people can kind of use on a project, or where are we?
Right. So the code definitely works. If it's not working, then that's a bug. So it's possible to use this on the visualization side to do the same kind of visualizations you can do with H3 on the DeckGL website. In fact, one of the examples on the A5 website is an analysis of all the crash data in the UK, and it's showing like 100,000 points. And so 100,000 A5 cells, that is. So you can definitely visualize all the way down to the sub-centimeter level. The code base, I mean, at the beginning, I realized that it's very important not to just provide a TypeScript version. There have to be different versions in different languages. And I ported the code to Python and Rust to give a first, a good experience to both like data scientists and also a high-performance version that could be compiled and used elsewhere. And then people have started getting involved and built on top of this. So we have a QGIS plugin, and just like last week, then someone did a DuckDB integration. So it's actually super easy. You can just in DuckDB now just import A5 from the community, and then do things like convert lat long to A5 cell, and it's just going to spit that out for you, and you can start using it straight away.
Very cool. Congratulations on the... what has been the feedback that you've had so far on this project in terms of...
people... Pretty positive. I think people think it's just quite a novel idea, because we've had these systems for a long time, and no one has ever tried it out with pentagons. So I think the kind of people this appeals to, I fully know it's maybe a little bit of a niche. It's not like I'm starting the next Facebook. It is, after all, a global grid system, not like a consumer product. What I would really like to see is people to start using this and start doing analyses with it and starting to actually just see if what I'm claiming the system can do is actually there. Because I'm not, I'm not a data scientist. I'm not running these kind of like big workflows, workloads on like the different analyses. I'm more doing the visualization side of things. And even though I believe that it could be used and potentially even be better in some cases than the existing systems, I would love to see other people do it, share their work, and then give me feedback on what they'd like changed, what works, what doesn't work, etc.
Okay, very cool. And you're looking also for developers to get involved to actually help you, or is it? I mean, a lot of this is it. I guess what I'm asking is, these types of, now that you've got it right, this kind of tiling system, is it kind of done, or is there still technical work to be done? In the sense that once you've covered the globe once, we don't need to cover it again, do we? I mean, like.
Well, I mean, you know. H3 was released years and years ago by a $1 billion corporation, and they're still working on it, right? So I don't think these things are ever completely done. And A5 definitely, I think, can be used for things now, but I wouldn't call it done. There are still more sort of like higher level functions that I'd like to add to the API. So one thing is something like saying, okay, I have a point and I want to convert it into a cell. That's kind of easy. But what if I have like a polygon and I want to know what collection of cells make up that polygon? Then something like H3 offers a polyfill function, and this is something that I like to add to A5, but I haven't had the time to do it. So one side is making the API itself more powerful. So that's kind of like going deeper. But the other part of making a system like this successful is just spreading the world, spreading the word, getting people interested and making it easy for developers to use it wherever. So one of the reasons something like H3 is so widely used is that in almost any environment, you can pull in a plugin to use H3. There are data providers out there who have already processed your data into H3, so you can just download the data set. So I would love to see the same kind of people who are providing their data in H3 to also offer it in A5. So if, for example, you, Ed, would like to kind of play around with it, then you can just like fire up DuckDB, you can download a Parquet file from someone, import the A5 data, do some processing on it, then save it to a file, and then use DeckGL, which actually now has an A5 layer as well, to visualize it. But if any one of these points you're kind of missing an integration, then you're like, oh, what do I do? Do I have to export it out to GeoJSON and then it runs really slow? So it's kind of like spreading, it's going both like deep to improve the usefulness of it in just one context, but also then making it more useful across the whole industry. And I think that is essentially the challenge. You're trying to get something established as more of a standard. And we somehow never know what is going to sort of take off, what is going to be useful.
Yes, this is fascinating. I do encourage everyone really to check out this website. You have very pretty visualizations here. That I have to admit, I didn't get it at first. I didn't get that the Pentagon always stays the same. It's just not regular. What a cool twist on it. I guess in the true sense of the word, a twist in that then actually could cover the globe. I would not have thought that. Although, I mean, I'm not deep in the mouth of tiling or anything, but
I mean, I wouldn't have thought that as well, honestly. And I have been looking at these things a lot, and I've actually been surprised. I mean, I will also say my own ignorance, like for some time, like a year ago, I didn't have much of a clue about the internals of H3. If you'd asked me, are the cell sizes the same? I would have said, yeah, more or less. Okay. And I was surprised that they weren't. And if you asked me, where are the pentagons? I'd be like, I don't know, somewhere. I didn't actually realize they have this. I mean, they are in the same place that they are on a football, actually. So if you think of a football, then I think it's the black panels that are pentagons and the white ones, which are hexagons. And it's basically H3. It's the same thing, or very, very, very close to. At any rate, the same reason why you have 12 pentagons on a football or a soccer ball is the same reason you have them in H3.
Gotcha.
Yeah. If you're on the website, I would just, if people want to just look at one example, I would point them at the Airbnb one, which I think does a very good job showing this the difference between the two systems, so A5 and H3. And it's essentially running like an aggregation on Airbnb listings, and it's counting how many of them fall in each cell, so either an A5 cell or a H3 cell. And it's comparing two locations. So one of them is Oslo, one of them is Malta. And if you then look, what you end up with is roughly this kind of like 3D geospatial bar chart, which is going to give you an understanding of what the density of your Airbnbs are. And in the H3 case, it looks like there's way, way more, I think it is in Malta, than in Oslo. It looks like it's almost double. And then if you switch to A5, then they look roughly the same. And so you say, like, well, why is this? And the answer is actually really simple. It's that the H3 cells are double the size in one city compared to the other. So you're not comparing like with like.
Ah, okay, yeah, that is cool. Now I get it. That is a good visualization, yes. Well done.
So in that case, if you think you're maybe some kind of travel company and you're trying to find, you know, the place to next invest, maybe you're going to choose one city over another just because your ruler.
Bad so visualization,
yeah. Yeah, or bad analysis, yeah.
Okay, I get it. Very cool. I encourage everyone to have a look at this. Felix, any closing thoughts you want to leave the listeners with, or any, you know, how can they best get involved? How can they get in touch with you if this is prompted questions?
I think we've quite nicely gone through everything. I can obviously talk about this forever and go deeper and deeper. I'm doing a few talks this autumn. There's going to be two at Phosphorgy in New Zealand in a few weeks, which hopefully will be recorded and put online. So if you'd like to learn more about how the whole system works, what it does, then I'd recommend checking those out. Or if you're in New Zealand, then come along. That would be great.
Well, hopefully we're going to get you to a GeoMob event somewhere in Europe as well at some point.
That would be great. I think I have not much excuse given that I'm willing to travel to New Zealand for 4G.
Right. Exactly.
Given that I'm based in Europe, I should be able to make it. Yeah. But if people want to get in touch in any way, then all of the code is open source and it's on GitHub. And we've had people collaborate, and that's been really, really nice to see. Like, some of the best contributions have been done from people who just like picked up the code and started working with it and ported it into a different language or built something on top of it. On the website, you can also find a link to our, we have a Slack set up, so you can reach me through that. Or on LinkedIn. But I would say just go to the website itself, and from there, hopefully it should be kind of clear where to go next if you're more trying to get involved in the actual project, or if you want to start using it. There's a bunch of quick start pages there just saying, hey, if you're a Rust developer, do this. If you're using DuckDB, do this. And yeah, and if there's anything missing, then please make an issue, let me know, and try our best to improve it.
Cool stuff, Felix. Thank you very much. I encourage everyone to have a look at this and give it a play. The visualizations are really quite nice. And get involved. So thanks very much for coming on the show, Felix. Appreciate it.
Sure. It's been really great. Really fun.
Thanks for joining us today on the GeoMob podcast. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. You can get the show notes over on the website, which is at thegeomob.com. And while you're there, you can sign up for our monthly newsletter and find links to our accounts on Mastodon and LinkedIn, so that you can stay up to date on all our upcoming events. We hope to see you at an event soon.